With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut on today's News Talk, TNT.
Here with me on this week's episode of Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Reut on tntradio.live, lighting the fuse for freedom. Now, this week's big development is the launch of the new generative AI chatbot from the makers of Facebook. It's called Meta.ai, and you can freely access this through any browser. Now, there's no sign of a Meta Pro AI that you'll have to pay US$20 for as yet. They, of course, believe their new AI system is the most intelligent AI system you can use for free, because it is free at the moment. And aside from using Meta.ai, that's the web address in your browser, you can access it in Facebook, in Instagram, WhatsApp and Messenger, in your feed, your chats, your search, and more across Meta apps to get things done and access real-time information without having to leave the app that you're using. And like other AI systems, it does have an image generation capability, and it's now billed as being faster, producing images as you type, so you can create album artwork for your band, they say, your decor inspiration for your apartment, animated custom GIFs and more. And when I checked it out, I asked it who TNTRadio.live was, and it seemed to think we were a music and contemporary station. Only Copilot and Grok seem to get it actually right and talking about lighting the fuse for freedom and alternative media and the various things. I mean, check out these different AI systems for yourself. Ask different ones the same question. Don't just believe what you're told, because as they say, garbage in, garbage out, it can get something wrong, and it's not always right. Now, today we have two great guests, one from Swan Security and the other from chipmaker AMD. So let's get started with our first guest. He is Alex Talevsky, the CEO of Swan Security, which is using generative AI in an innovative new way. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Swan Security is an Australian success story that now operates globally. So just before we get into the Gen AI and how you're using that, can you just give us a quick refresher on Swan in 2024?
Yeah, Swan's been around a long time, 37 years. It kind of started in the shed, as all these stories go, of David Swan, the founder, building data modems in his shed for the Australian consumer market, because the standard was slightly different. So he went and kind of modified and built them out of his shed and kind of distributed it through Dick Smith and other retailers in Australia. It grew really quickly, and he founded the space of do-it-yourself security, you know, something that you would package, sell through a retailer, and then the consumer could install themselves. So it was all about, you know, finding the right components, instructions, giving, you know, support and things like that. And the consumers could do it themselves, and they would save quite a bit of money, but also have, you know, control of what they want to do and how they want to secure their home. And since then, it's grown really quickly. Swan is now available in 40 countries. We have more than 5 million homes secured with Swan products. And now is all designed and developed in Port Melbourne, Australia. And we're looking for the next wave of consumer security.
So, well, I know that you have the Max Range product, where you've got very long range for the Wi-Fi, which is great when you want to secure a large property or just right to the edges of your property. But the big new product launching soon is a doorbell that can talk to visitors like it's a human being. Now, before we get a demo on how it all works, what's the name of the hardware and the service behind it? And when did you have the idea to use AI in your home security products and services?
Yeah, so it's a combination of hardware and software. We are looking to make it available through all of our products, all of our current range of products, beginning with our Buddy doorbell and our Max Range Stellar doorbell. And then, of course, it will go through to cameras and things like that. So that's the hardware side of it. The software side of it is called Home Shield. And Home Shield comes in two flavors: Home Shield Concierge, which is the doorbell function, and Home Shield Defender, being the camera function. The only difference between them is the doorbell goes and responds to you pushing the button and interacts with you naturally, whereas the camera does it proactively when it says humans in a certain armed state.
Now, before we actually get to a demo of Home Shield answering your questions live, how long have you been working on this, and what were some of the challenges in doing so, especially considering that no one's done this before?
Yeah, generally, you know, AI we've been doing for around 3 years. We do our own in-house developed computer vision software, which basically is able to classify humans, pets, cars, packages, things like that. We take over 100 million inferences or requests to process such data every month. So it is quite a large set of infrastructure and software. And that's been going around for 3 years. But in the last year, we created this or came up with this idea that you know, AI can actually do so much more and can we actively you know, prevent crime by just simply interacting with people at the door. The idea started with this premise that, you know, modern doorbells, it's all about you being home, you know, being acting like you're home, answering from anywhere. But actually in practice, you're not, because you know, we're desensitized to notifications. Your phone's on silent, you're in a meeting like this one. Well, actually, the worst case is when you are away for a prolonged period of time, and maybe, you know, internationally, and you're actually sleeping. And those tend to be the most kind of the most dangerous cases where you do want the doorbell, or you yourself want to answer it, but you just won't. You'll miss it. So we thought, well, why don't we use AI and modern AI to do that and do it in such a natural way? The challenges that came from that, though, were really, really, really difficult, because what you need is very, very low latency, right? You need this very natural interactive kind of session, and then you need it to be very accurate. So it needs to understand exactly in context what you're trying to say, and that could be thousands of different things. And then you also, when you scale it in the consumer space, you need the cost to be controlled. So yeah, we've done that, and yeah, it performs quite well.
Well, let's get a demo and see how the system is working. So go for it.
Sure. So I've got a sample of the product here. This is the Buddy doorbell. What I'll give you a little bit of context. So in this case, the user has configured it that Alex and Olivia are the homeowners, and the homeowners have instructed the doorbell when packages are received to leave them at the door. There are several other parameters, but let's just give it a go, right?
Okay, so you're pushing the button.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I've got a delivery for Alex.
No dramas. I can't come to the door, but you can leave the delivery by the front door, mate. The homeowner will grab it later.
Okay. So it will naturally respond. It will respond differently every time. It isn't programmed. It's not a set of things that we say you can say these kind of things. It's got its own personality. So if you do the same thing again, or you do something different, every time will be different. It is configurable in terms of how aggressive it can be or how polite it can be. And that can be mode-based. So during the day, you should be fairly polite, because it's probably the Amazon guy with a delivery. However, if someone's on your porch at 2 a.m., you probably should be a little bit more aggressive. Do you want to try some more?
Go for it, yes.
All right. Let's try someone that doesn't live there, right?
Hi, how can I help you?
Hi, I've got a package for John.
Sorry, mate. Looks like you might have the wrong address. The homeowners here are Alex and Olivia, not John.
And so what if you ask it, like, if Donald, well, I suppose if you ask if Donald Trump lives there, it's going to say the same thing. But what if a salesperson comes to the door?
Sure. Hey, what's up?
Hey, buddy, do you want to buy some raffle tickets?
Now, mate, not interested. Let's call it a day, eh?
So you've got different accents, you've got different personalities. I mean, how much testing have you done to try and trick the system into revealing that it's not really a person? And also, does it, I mean, it hasn't announced that it's an AI. So how do you get around that? Because Google, for example, with its phone answering system, it will say, hey, this is Google AI that you're talking to. So what happens there?
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky. I mean, we can ask it if you like. The problem that you've got here is kind of it's innocuous in that it's dealing with someone at the door. You certainly don't want it announcing that it's AI, because then it means there is someone or something taking care of your home while you are actually away. So it defeats the purpose. Even though it doesn't announce that it is AI, it is effective at dealing with it. And you're not quite sure, especially if you're new to the home, whether that is real or it isn't real, because it is quite variable. It does have its own personality. It can speak 10 different kind of accents. It can have 10 different English accents, and it will speak French and Spanish.
All right. Now, what happens if me as the homeowner, you know, I'm wanting to actually either follow along and get a transcript or even break in. What happens there? You know, when I say break in, I mean, I want to enter the conversation and actually speak to the person at the door myself.
Yeah, so while we're doing this, I'm getting a transcript of all the things that are said on my phone. At any time, you can jump in and take over and you know, actually handle it yourself. In most cases, you won't, because the vast majority of things it can handle really well. If it is going astray or something that you don't want to do, by all means, like you would have any other doorbell, you're free to jump in and do it yourself.
So when will this be on sale, and what is the camera and the service cost?
So May 13th is the target. It's currently in an alpha. We're still developing it in terms of just making sure that we cover all of those cases. There are thousands of different things that we've considered and tested. It will be the service. It will originally be available for the Buddy doorbell, the one that I'm kind of holding here. It is also coming to the Stella doorbell. This is the very long range kind of gate bell. It's kind of durable metal construction and can go hundreds of meters from your home, just like Max, who a camera that has this max range capability. Those are the products. If we go with the Buddy doorbell in Australia, the retail is around $299 for the doorbell itself, and the service is $1,299. Elsewhere in the world, rough numbers, is about $199 for the doorbell and $999 for the service.
$10 a month. And you were telling me that there's also a service where you can have it professionally monitored. So if you're, you know, overseas asleep and you don't want to, you know, break into the call because it's 3 a.m. for you, even though it's, you know, 6 p.m. back in Australia, then you can actually have a professional service answer the doorbell for you. Well, break in as well if it needs to.
Yeah. I mean, it's an important idea, right? If the doorbell does detect the threat and I am actually overseas, what can I do about it? Nothing, right? And I think security cameras have this powerful positioning because they're actually on the outside. Now, alarm systems, you need to open the door, the alarm goes off, and at that point triggers all of these things with professional monitors trying to deal with that situation. The issue with it is that false triggers with alarms are 99.98%. So it's very difficult to call the police and say, there's an alarm going off, do something about it. They'll tend to think it's a false trigger. Right. Whereas with cameras, it's a powerful position because it's before anyone enters, you have the real chance of actually preventing it. And more than that, you have video evidence. So if you call police and say, I can clearly see someone with a balaclava at the front trying to gain entry, then they will treat it with much higher priority.
And someone on the chat room saying that, I'm sorry, the intercom system clearly sounds like an AI and wouldn't fool anybody into thinking it's a human. Nice try, though. I mean, clearly this system will evolve. I mean, the voice has become more natural. And one of the things that I was wondering, can you have it clone my voice, for example, or have you made the decision not to do that?
So to answer the question on the chat, we are actually specifically doing this for the purpose of presentation. It answers the call immediately. Obviously, in a real case, that it will ring and it will take some time, and we have a variable response. And then beyond that, we inject noise in the background of the conversation, and sometimes even background chatter. So it makes it more and more difficult. But for the purpose of an interview and presenting it here, even before this show, we're trying to make sure that it's very clear and easy to understand. So you can see the power of the service and the technology, rather than is it exactly as you would expect a random conversation to be. So it will absolutely be much more variable. It will have noise in the background, and it'll be very difficult, especially through the speaker of a doorbell. Then it is going to evolve. So but it certainly isn't going to mirror your voice. We did toy with that idea to say we can do it. We can make it sound exactly like you. The issue is that when you do have guests, you know, it clearly isn't you. You know, Alex is answering the door and saying these really strange things, potentially, because it does have its own personality. That shouldn't be the case. It is just simply someone house sitting at the time and isn't meant to sound like anyone else. And as I said, there's 10 voices to choose from.
Yeah, well, that's very good context, and hopefully the person in the chat room is hearing that, and I'm sure they'll be able to go into one of their, you know, local stores in the next month or two and try it out for themselves and see what it sounds like. One of the demos I saw when somebody was filming this at CES was they pushed the doorbell, or they got your employee to sort of pretend that there was a fire at the house. So let's see what happens when somebody, you know, rings the doorbell and says, oh, there's a fire.
Sure.
Can I help you?
Hey, mate, your house is on fire.
Crikey, that's not good. You'd better go and alert the neighbors for help. I can't come to the door right now.
Okay.
Now, now, as the person who was filming that video said, it doesn't sound sort of as concerned as it should be. But that's, again, that's something that you can program in to make it sound more, you know, worried and to be more alert.
Right. So because it is handling lots of things, from trick-or-treaters to, by the way, one of the test items, you definitely don't want to be really aggressive and alert with kids. But and you are handling visitors and you are indeed handling packages and things, you do need that, tone to be reflective of the content. In this case, it's not, right? So the first version, it is kind of flat. We are working on updating it to put, the tone specific to the context. And that will happen quite quickly, perhaps even before it is launched in May.
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing. When you sell products these days, they are not just static. They do actually evolve, especially in the era of generative AI. Look, Alex, we need to take a quick break, so I'll be back with you in a moment. For everyone out there, please don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the App Store or Google Play so you can easily watch live or listen to us anywhere and at any time. We're available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on today's news talk, TNT, back after the break.
TNT's David Curtin.
I really don't think that they've thought this through, because say you get to the year, 2040, and anyone who's under 31 will not be allowed to buy cigarettes, and anyone who's over 31 will be allowed to. How is that going to be enforced? Will the shops require ID from 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds in the future to see whether they're allowed to purchase tobacco products or not? At the moment, there's no issue, as I say, but in the future, it's going to be completely ridiculous. I don't think that shops will want to do that. It will be essentially unenforceable.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7, your news talk giant, TNT.
We are definitely on the air with TNTRadio.live. I'm joined by Alex Talevsky, the CEO of Swan Security. We've just been looking at the generative AI doorbell that can answer people's questions and accept deliveries and operate at very long ranges. And the system is not yet on sale and will be regularly updated. Now, Alex, can this be retroactively added to Swan systems that people already have, or is this a whole new category for the company?
It can. So we've had the Buddy 4K doorbell, a leading doorbell and resolution in the market for a while. It absolutely will be supported by those devices in the future. So if you do have a Buddy 4K doorbell, look forward to Home Shield Concierge powering that doorbell. It will also be available with our Max Ranger family of products. Max Ranger has launched recently and will be available in that. So really, it's the current range. You know, using AI, especially delivering it at the edge is a complex thing. It requires lots of processing power. So it's only possible with the latest hardware.
Yeah. I mean, these little cameras are basically have smartphone style chips inside, and it's like a smartphone that has a very specific task of securing you via video, audio, and now, of course, you know, answering like it's a human. So it'll be fascinating to see this evolution. And it just makes me think, given that we saw on stage with Jensen Huang from NVIDIA's the ability for them to have their, you know, ChatGPT running, that they have these robots that are powered by ChatGPT. So when do you think we might have a Swan home security robot, or is that something that's still a decade away?
We've considered this quite a lot, actually. You'd be surprised, you know, from kind of robot vacuum cleaner form factors kind of going around and drones flying inside of and outside of your home. We've considered it quite a lot. And, you know, we've done drones. Swain has done drones before, but really manually controlled, not automatically controlled. And it's super challenging, honestly, because various permutations that exist in a home. So being able to fly a drone, for example, inside or outside, you're dealing with weather, you're dealing with cars and people and pets and all of the things that exist. So it's challenging. And it's the same thing internally as well, because you could be running into light fixtures and things, and it can be dangerous in its own right. So that's not to say that it won't happen, but it is that, you know, we are considering it. We do feel the risk potential, and maybe the big guys with their sophisticated robots like Elon and Nvidia are the ones to bring the hardware, and will certainly bring the software, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, I do want to know what's the back-end system that's powering this, because everybody knows ChatGPT. But in the chat room, somebody said, who is going to pay for a device that will give out the person's names from that address to complete strangers when asked? But you can no doubt configure the system to give out as much information as you want. It doesn't have to give the names out if you don't want it to.
Yeah, that's right. So if you actually ask for the names, you won't say them. And sometimes it's just like our generative AI. If it feels the context validates that, it will say that Alex and Olivia in this case are not home or not available at this stage, if it feels the context is the case. In most cases, it will not. It won't provide that information, and it will tell you to go away, and is absolutely configurable.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a human house sitter. They may choose to give the name of the owners as well. I mean, you will have no control over that. So, yeah. Look, I mean, I can see some, there are some, sorry?
Especially if the person is named, it will tend to interact in that case. If the person isn't named in the request, then it will try to protect it.
Now, everybody knows, as I said, ChatGPT and OpenAI, but I understand you're using Amazon systems. So just tell us briefly how the backend is operating and with which generative AI solution.
Yeah, so we're using AWS Bedrock. There's lots of reasons for AWS. I mean, we've been a partner of AWS's for 13 years. All of our infrastructure resides on AWS. It's specific because we're GDPR NDAA compliant, which is very, very important to consumers, that their data remains local, and that we're not using certain hardware that is prohibited in these applications. More than that, though, is also that AWS had launched the Bedrock service in Sydney, where you're looking that latency to be, you know, to shave every second out of that interaction and make it natural. You want it very fast. So having AWS launching in Sydney means it's GDPR compliant. So the data won't leave Australia in this case, in my case, and won't leave the US if you're operating it out of the US. And then it's very, very fast and the latency is low. We are using their acquired Anthropic model. They acquired Anthropic recently, and Anthropic's performance is very, very good. You know, the challenge we have is the ultimate challenge, because we need to combine the lowest latency with the highest accuracy and the lowest cost, which normally you can't do. I mean, this is really, really challenging. But AWS has been very good, and you can see that it is able to get exact context of what's happening and react in context.
Yeah, well, it's obviously going to be rapidly advancing, which is just the natural order of things with technology. Now, I always like to think that your customers are your best R&D division. So what great ideas from customers have you heard over the years or the past year or two that have turned into features that are now in everyday use?
Let me tell you an interesting thing. You know, we take more than 300,000 support calls a year. We provide lifetime support to our consumers, which is quite unusual. I think that for me, it goes to the brand, you know, that we stand behind our products, that we're delivering quality products. We also offer 2-year warranty as standard. And we take so many of those calls and support it for the life of the product, you know. In addition to that, reviews in apps, 210,000, 4.6 stars on Android and iOS. So it is very, very popular and does very well. And finally, we recently asked our users to give us advice, you know, in our apps, and got 100,000 written responses. Can you imagine? So we had to write tools to actually process the responses. You couldn't read them. But what we did find, and one of the interesting kind of the feedback we've got from a guy, I won't name the surname, but John, is basically said that, you know, I want activity reporting in my app. I want to know when all of my packages arrived. I want to know when people came and left. You know, I want a kind of summary of my week. And when we did that, you know, that's quite a simple thing, actually, just building a rapport that the consumers can see. But what came from that, though, was that what we found was the pattern of behavior of any given home. If you take your own, like I take my own kind of life, you kind of leave for work 7:30, 8 o'clock, and then you kind of come back at the same time via the same kind of route, right? So there is a pattern in that. And having that pattern means you kind of know what's normal and what's abnormal. The easiest way to describe this and why activity reporting and activity pattern recognition for consumers is so powerful is, unless you're a shift worker, someone at your porch at 2 a.m. is a pretty bad scenario and you should do something about it. The unfortunate thing with that is you're probably sleeping and you won't know until it's too late. If the devices can detect that you're not a shift worker, and that's quite uncommon, and two, can proactively act, you know, this proactive prevention piece that is behind Home Shield, then you have a very real chance of preventing it on the outside, not when the door is open. So this led, even though it was quite a simple request, it led down a path of actually quite a powerful feature.
Well, that is pretty good. I mean, you want your system to be able to proactively know if somebody's there and react. And obviously, if it's one of your kids coming home at 2 a.m, it should be able to recognize that too.
And, yeah, it's normal.
And not be aggressive to them.
Mm, that's right. And, you know, it'll be on certain nights. And it does happen otherwise, so you know that in this particular household, that is hot. You know, kids go out and celebrate and all those things, so it's quite normal. But then on other hand, elderly people like myself probably try to get to bed a little bit earlier, and it's abnormal to be on my porch at 2 a.m. So you know, weekends and weekdays would be different as well. And that pattern recognition is a powerful idea.
Yeah. Now, as a live television show that is going around the world, and we have a live chat room, one of the commenters here is talking about how, you know, the system's going to know when you're not at home, and so the government may wish to pay you a visit and take control of your system. And look, I mean, sounds a little bit crazy to me, but I sort of think that Amazon is giving the footage, or giving the police in the US access to the footage of their Ring system. So, I mean, in a nutshell, and I'm sure people can contact you, what's the short version of if the government wants to see footage from your camera in Australia with, or in the US with Swan?
So let me reassure you that isn't happening. Certainly not at Swan. I can't comment about Ring. But we are GDPR compliant. We take this really seriously. Actually, out of the five pillars of what differentiates Swan, security and privacy is right up there. And we take it so seriously that we've got CyberCX auditing all of our infrastructure independently. CyberCX, for those that don't know, is the top kind of cybersecurity consultancy in Australia. We've also got AWS to certify it. The data absolutely does not leave the country, and we use all the right hardware to protect consumer data. We will absolutely not provide the government, especially government saying, just give me some footage or knowing when people are or aren't home. That is not happening.
Yeah. Well, look, this is the benefit of having a live chat room and to be able to answer people's questions and concerns live. Look, we are running short on time because I do have another guest, but what is your final message to everybody watching about cybersecurity and generative AI in 2024?
You know, I think it's going to come a long way. You know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. What you see on Concierge, I mean, interactive, and people say, well, it's not natural, isn't it? I can tell you that in that 1 year, the progress that it's made and its ability to handle this situation and handle such a vast variety of scenarios and its power to actively prevent is massive. We're keeping our heads down, developing. Obviously, it won lots of awards and has gotten a lot of respect. But we're going to keep going. And I think that this will make a huge difference. Stay tuned.
Well, especially in a year or two when we have even more powerful systems, the ability for the voices to be even more incredibly fluid and human sounding, and even to have generative AI create videos on the fly of, you know, your home persona that can appear on a little screen that you'll have there next to your doorbell. So someone can actually see a person there, which can be obviously different each time. It's going to be very exciting to see that.
There you have it. Great idea. That's something that we'll consider. Thank you.
Well, Alex Talevsky, the CEO of Swan Security, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you. Speak anytime.
No worries. Well, we're just going to have a quick sweep, I think, if the producers are there, and then we'll be on to our next guest. Oh, no, we're just going to go straight through. Okay, yep. No, I should have been more up to date on what I was knowing about doing that. So, look, our second guest. I'm very excited for our second guest. His name is Peter Chambers. He is the MD of sales and the country manager for AMD in Australia, but the MD of sales for the Asia Pacific division. So, Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. Now, Pete, AI has been worked on for decades, but has really captured the public's imagination since ChatGPT burst onto the scene in November 2022, only 18 months ago, and it's grown so much in power and capability and in the public's imagination and in genuine usage. And in fact, just in the last couple of days, we even had Facebook launch their latest Meta.ai. Now, AMD offers AI acceleration processors for data centers, supercomputers, you know, that you make the chips for PlayStations and Xboxes, and you've got AI built into your server desktop and laptop chips, and even graphics cards from AMD can also deliver that. But what are the things that AI lets you accomplish in your business and personal life in a faster and more efficient way on your desktop than you could before when you only had to do it through the cloud?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, with large language models, there's a lot of advantages. And I think about what we do on a day-to-day basis, right? So as a salesperson, I'm creating emails to send out to customers to talk to them about how we'd love to do business with them, how we'd like to engage. And so one of the things that I've started to use is using AI to formulate, you know, emails and help start, instead of starting with a blank page. For me personally, I struggle with a blank page. I like to have something to build around. And so, you know, using a large language model has helped me be more efficient in my work life and create content and create things more quickly that I can then get out to market and work with my customers. And then from a personal standpoint, it's still in the cloud, but if you think about all the other things that we do on a day-to-day basis, you know, your great playlists in Spotify, you know, it's using AI. And it's amazing when I talk to folks. People are hesitant about AI. They, a lot of folks that we speak to are a little concerned. They think it's, you know, it might take their job or it's threatening in some way. And then you start to talk to them about how many times a day they're interacting with AI already. We think about, as I said, your Android Auto, right? If you're in the car and you're driving along and someone sends you a WhatsApp or a text and you can reply verbally, you're using a large language model, you're using AI. Your recommendations on Netflix, on Spotify, are all using that technology. So I think, you know, people need to look at it as a way to help them and be more efficient than a threat.
Sure. Well, we now have the AI PC where AI can be done on your device. I mean, Windows 11 it has the Copilot built in, and you've got various programs from Adobe, and there's Audition, which is a music editing program. I mean, there's lots of different programs that are out there that previously, if they did have any AI features, they had to use some of the power from the main CPU and also some of the power from the graphics processing unit, which could chew more power from your battery life. But now we have this separate AI, this neural processing unit. And so you must have been working very closely with people like Microsoft and all those companies that make that software to make sure that they can now take advantage of this neural processing unit and perform those tasks faster, but also on device, which is also good for privacy and speed.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the MPU, there's a lot of AI functions that can actually be functioned on graphics, right, and be accelerated through the graphics processor, but it's not as energy efficient. And the beauty of the MPU is it's a dedicated co-processor that is specifically designed to do that kind of processing algorithms. So you get great battery life, and to your point, exactly that, on the edge, all that information is kept on your personal device and it's not bouncing up to the cloud. And again, for those that are the security conscious amongst us, that's a great thing for them.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, if you're going to be buying a new PC, look out for one that has the NPU, this AI PC capability inside there. Launching now from all the major vendors, from AMD. I mean, also Intel is doing it too. I mean, the Samsung chips have them. The Apple chips have this neural processing unit. So the PC world has caught up, and AMD actually was first to bring that to the world of PCs. But one of the other big things AMD has done is launched a chip which is competing against NVIDIA's H100. Now, if people are not aware, that's the chip that people like OpenAI use to help bring ChatGPT and make it the big success that it is today. But whenever you have, you know, a player that has the big chip, you need somebody else to be a competitor to keep prices down and to make sure the competition is, you know, roaring. So AMD has the Instinct MI300X, called an AI accelerator. So tell us about this AI accelerator and how, you know, the market is receiving it as an alternative to NVIDIA's H100.
Yeah, well, it's being received very, very well. It has 156 billion transistors, if you can even fathom that. It's the biggest chip we've ever made. And it's, again, as you mentioned, it's specifically designed for those workloads, those AI workloads. Now, it's not just about driving AI. As we design a product, for us, it's really, really important that it has to be energy efficient, right? So we designed it to be have a leadership performance per watt. And also we've designed it to be open source. So we're very focused as a company, not just from an AI standpoint, but across all our divisions. We're all about open ecosystems and open software ecosystems. And so MI300X is no different. And we support an open ecosystem with that product as well.
Well, so
you're not
I
locked
can see-
in. You're not locked into a specific framework.
Yeah, I can see here from the chat that somebody is saying that they're clients are insisting they delete Copilot from Windows 11 due to copyright issues. And that's because, I mean, if you look at Copilot and you ask it questions, it's bringing things down from the internet, showing you the sources. But when you have an AI system that's on your own computer, it can generate that locally without having to search the internet for information because it has, I mean, it does not have an entire copy of the internet there, but it can use both the NPU and the graphics to generate information locally without having to go to the internet.
Yeah, and we'll see a lot more software enablement coming down the line. Again, we're still fairly early on, I would say. We're just coming to that inflection point now. If we think about the software, when we first launched our NPU-enabled CPU last year in the first half, there was only three features inside Windows that leveraged it. Only three things when we launched it. Right now, today, there's over 100 applications across multiple different workloads that leverage it. And I would expect as we go forward, that's going to be, you know, hundreds and hundreds onto a thousands. That said, at the moment, to your point though, what we need is software that goes in and trawls the data on your own system. And therefore it's only looking through what's on your PC. And ultimately that becomes a PC, your own PC assistant, is looking at the data that is ring fenced on your current device, and it's not going out to the cloud. Right. That said, that also limits the database that it's trawling through. Right. Mm. So there's always those swings and roundabouts and compromises that need to be made depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah. And we do see the emergence of open source large language models and chatbots, which can be customized by you. And we're still at the very early stages of AI. It's incredible to think how primitive we are, but how far we've come in just 18 months. But look, Pete, we do have to take a quick break. So why not give TNT Radio a follow? We are on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Please help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time, right here on today's News Talk TNT. Back up.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
We all know what it's like to feel alone. But it just takes one new connection.
Want to get out of here?
To empower many.
This is unbelievable.
It doesn't take a superhero to bring forces together. We all have the power to reach out.
Let's go!
and help someone feel like they belong.
Pretty cool, huh?
We are stronger together.
Alex Zaharoff-Royt and Talkin' Tech on today's News Talk TNT.
Thanks for coming back and joining me. I'm here with Pete Chambers from AMD. Now, Pete, we are in the midst of the AI PC revolution. So what is the definition of an AI PC?
Well, for us, for a mobile device, an AI PC is actually a combination of the CPU, the GPU, and an NPU. And the NPU is the neural processing unit. And so, as I think I mentioned earlier on, there's workloads that you can do on the GPU from an AI standpoint. There's workloads that you can do on the NPU as well. And so we see there's a mixture across those three environments that really deliver the best customer experience. So to your earlier point, we've already shipped millions of AI-enabled PCs. As we said, we started shipping in the first half of 2023. We've just announced our second generation of product. And then we'll also see a third generation of product as we move into the second half. So we do see a trend in this direction. We do see demand from the customers. And so we're working very hard to bring to market the right type of product with the right enablement.
And just in the last week, you announced the 8000G series. That's the business desktop, and also the Ryzen Pro. Well, both of them are Ryzen Pros for the laptop market as well. So, if you are a consumer or a business person, there are new computers from. And so, who are some of your partners in Australia and globally that are shipping these new chips?
Well, I mean, across the board, from an AI enablement standpoint, all the major OEMs have AMD AI-enabled Ryzen AI products. So Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Lenovo from a client side. And then if you think about the cloud and server, you see all the major brands there as well with the MI300X. So Dell, HPE, Supermicro, and Lenovo there as well. So across the board, we're seeing enablement with our partners.
Now, at the moment, the AI chips are still quite new, but how long do you think it'll be before every chip that you sell from the low end, and I guess the high end already has it, but how long will it be before every chip has an AI brain inside?
Look, I think I'm going to answer that in two parts. I think there was a survey from IDC recently, and they believe about 60% of all PC shipments by 2027 will be AI enabled, right? So that's by 60% by 2027. I think me personally, and looking at the roadmap and where we see the market headed, I think it's probably a five to six year horizon for full adoption across everything, top to bottom. But obviously, it's a journey. But yeah, 60% by 2027 sounds quite reasonable in my mind.
Now, a lot of people also are users of Linux. Now, we know that Windows 11 has the Copilot built in, and you have Copilot Pro, and AMD's been working closely with Microsoft on that. But can people who run Linux also take advantage of the new AI component of these AMD chips?
That's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure. I'm going to embarrass myself by not knowing the answer to that.
Well, I didn't. I don't know either. But I mean, it's really up to the Linux, the makers of the various Linux distributions to take advantage of that. And now that this is now a standard part of new computers, I mean, they presumably will. And I know that many of the servers that are out there and using data centers and upon which a lot of the generative AI systems like ChatGPT are running on, I mean, they are running on Linux. So I would imagine so. Now, we did speak about this before, but I mean, you mentioned there's 150 different programs that can now take advantage of this AI component inside the chips. And I know that before we had the AI neural processing unit, these chips had to use the graphics processing unit. But can you tell us a bit more about some of the other programs that are out there that can take advantage of this NPU? Because when people go and buy this new computer, they're going to want to know which programs they can use to take advantage of that.
And as I think I touched on before, right? So 12 months ago, it was a very small list of features that were enabled. That's increased exponentially over the last 12 months. And so if we think about Adobe suite of software solutions, there's about 50 different features in there that are currently Ryzen AI accelerated. Topaz Labs, which is generative AI software applications, got over 25 features that are accelerated. And if you think about other apps like Zoom we're using today, DaVinci, Avid, OBS, and a number of others are all using offload to enhance the customer's experience, give a better visual experience, give a faster, more efficient experience. So yeah, that will continue to grow though. This is just the start, right? Obviously the hardware comes first and then the software enablement comes as we move forward. But there's over 150 ISVs that we're working with, and obviously inside each of those ISVs, there's multiple applications and features that we're working on.
Yeah, and in fact, AMD also had a competition for developers to get them to want to take advantage of this. And so in a nutshell, how has that been going?
Yeah, again, if we go back only 12 months ago, the number of folks we were working with was a very small number in a single digit. And so the adoption and uptake, and we launched a SDK at the end of last year to help, and that was part of that competition. And that's really brought up the adoption across the ISV community. And as I said, we expect to see that grow. We've got over 150 partners now that are working on solutions, but I'm sure if we come back and talk in 6 to 12 months, that would be significantly higher again.
Yeah, yeah. And just for those wondering, SDK is a software development kit. So if you're a developer, that's all right. I'm just thinking there's probably people out there who don't know. Now, can you remember the first time that you encountered ChatGPT? What was your reaction when you saw it?
It was quite interesting. It's a true story. So the first time I played around with one, and I was working on a project, and we're looking at a market plan for one of the countries, and we're looking at a particular segment. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to try this out. So I go in and I asked, I think it was Copilot at the time, around, can you tell me some more information about this particular vertical in this market in the region about laptops and screen size? I think I'd asked it. And it came back and said, I don't have that information, but what you should do is go and consult a third party person to go and do a survey for you to get you that information. it's always an iterative process when you're dealing with it. And as I said, now I find it much more useful in, compiling emails and pulling data and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you asked it today, I mean, here we are in April 2024, I bet you it would give you a better answer.
Yeah.
Because especially now, yeah, we should, but especially now, I mean, today's AI systems can actually access the internet. If you're using ChatGPT-4 or Copilot or Meta AI or Gemini, I mean, it actually searches the internet and gives you results, which actually is much more useful and much more handy in being able to know that information is correct. I know at the time when ChatGPT first launched, its information was limited to earlier in 2021. And I've got a friend who had to write a letter to a customer, and he really wasn't sure. He wrote all these different paragraphs, and he put it into ChatGPT and said, hey, can you condense this and make sure you use the right sort of business language? And it spat out a few paragraphs, and he was like, that's exactly what I was trying to say. ChatGPT did the job, which is...
Yeah, I've used it for that as well, like reworking things and compressing things and making it more concise. It's actually quite helpful, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions I always like to ask, and I didn't get a chance to ask this of Alex Tilevsky because we ran out of time, but I always like to ask if you could please share a memory of your first computer.
Oh, wow. The first computer I ever interacted with was, I think it was a Micro B.
I had one of those.
Yeah. And then the one that I probably spent the one after that I spent a reasonable amount of time, it wasn't my personal computer, it was a Commodore 64. And it was we had one Commodore 64 at the school in the computer lab, one computer, and it was a tape. And so we used to play a game called Choplifter, I think it was, and you'd
sort of
pick up the guys and drop them off. And you'd have to go through on the counter on the tape to get to the right point to upload the game into the system. And, of course, you'd spend half your lunch hour finding the point and then uploading the game. And then my first computer that my parents ever bought was an Osborne PC. And it was at a 5 1/4 inch drive and a turbo button. It was great. And you have the disc doubler. You'd have the hole punch on one side to make the single sided floppy double sided. Good times.
Yeah.
How things have changed.
Yeah. Kids wouldn't believe that we had to go. I mean, I've seen those videos where they show kids a cassette, and the kids like.
Yeah.
You couldn't skip straight to the next song. You'd only played for an hour. You had to turn the tape around. I mean, it's. It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away for those
people. We had that very modern device called Auto Reverse, so it'd automatically flip over the tape for you.
That's right.
Latest and greatest technology back in my day.
You knew you were advanced when you had that, yeah? I mean, I used to go to people's houses and I'd look at their VCR and they'd be usually blinking 00 0:00 because inevitably there was some sort of blackout and people didn't know how to fix the clock. And once you fix the clock for them and said, hey, you realize you can actually time shift, you can tell it to record at 6:30 so you can record some sort of show and then, you know, go out for dinner, or and when you come back you can then watch it. Yeah. And people are like, oh, you know, and we take all that for granted now with on-demand streaming. And what else do we need to know about the AI revolution and AMD's place within it?
Look, I think it's fair to say it's here to stay. We're certainly at an inflection point, and as I've mentioned a few times, right, it's really just getting started. And certainly from an AMD standpoint, we're here to innovate. We've got tens of thousands of engineers that are very focused on bringing the latest and greatest technology to bear. That said, what excites me probably the most is what our ecosystem partners will do. There's a lot of visionaries in that space, and how they utilize the hardware and what they do with it and the output they will bring is really what excites me and what I look forward to. So, lots of great things to happen.
And my second last question is to ask if you can please share some of the best advice you received in life to help you get where you are today.
Treat people how you want to be treated in life and business. I think my mother always instilled in me that manners are free. Like, just be nice to people. It's free. You don't have to have a degree to do that, right? So treat people how you want to be treated. Manage your own personal brand. We're all kind of, you know, you're Alex Proprietary Limited, I'm Pete Proprietary Limited. You manage your brand. Again, that sort of relates to the first point. And for me, it's always been about trying to learn my boss's job. Understand the processes, the tools that they're using, the systems they're using, and try and understand what the guy above you is doing and how they do it. And hopefully you can replace them and they move up into their next role. So, yeah.
Well, AI might be helping people to understand their role and their boss's role quicker. Maybe. And faster and better.
That's it.
So what is your final message to the viewers and the listeners?
As I said, I think it's an exciting time. Get in and you start to use some of the tools, play around with it, and really see how it can enhance your everyday and bring efficiencies to your life and work process.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today here on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Reut, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you very much. Well, you're still here with me. We've got a couple of minutes to go on Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Reut, and we did speak earlier this week with Chris Smith about Tesla's full self-driving. There is a subscription you can now get for $99, but that's only available in the US. That's per month. In Australia, that doesn't exist. And full self-driving is actually not legal here in Australia or in places like Hong Kong, where my cousin has one. But we'll hopefully learn more about when we'll be able to get full self-driving in places like Australia over the next couple of years, because it just takes time for that to be properly certified, because there are very different situations in different parts of the world with all the different laws. I have seen full self-driving work very smoothly on Tesla's videos all around Southern California, but it knows that area so well. In other countries, it's not so good, and that's why it's not available yet, although we do have things like autopilot and enhanced autopilot that can summon the car for you out of the driveway, but actually driving the car in Australia is not so simple yet, which is a shame. But Elon Musk has been promising full self-driving for years, and in fact the new system is called full self-driving supervised, which goes to show that it hasn't really been full self-driving for quite some time. And in fact in Australia, electric vehicles, whilst we have seen a surge in companies like BYD who have been able to outsell Tesla, hybrid electric vehicles are much more they're selling more of hybrid electric vehicles because you can choose whether you want to plug in or use petrol. So the electric car revolution has a long way to go, and hopefully by 2030 we'll have it all sorted, but we don't quite have it sorted yet. Anyway, thank you for joining me on this week's edition of Talking Tech with Alex Zaharov-Reut. Sonia Poulton is up next, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.